opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. I represent Bahamian people. I from
Nassau, Bahamas, big up Dayton, bro. Boy, I from Dayton, bro.
Right between West and Augusta, where them two roads meet, they call it Wilkinson Street. Manners and respect was like a sign blind check. It seems the ones that come in after quick to disrespect. You see, this life in the ghetto never easy. So many hungry days break, tell it grieve me. Way I doing the best I can, trying to turn my dollar to $100,000. I represent the ghetto people. I from
Nassau, Bahamas, big up Dayton, bro. Boy, I from Dayton, bro.
Don't take no back talk, no bribe.
Good night, Bahamas, and welcome to another edition of Inside the Inner City that premieres every Friday, except holidays, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Garden Radio 96.9 FM. And it's always a pleasure to be a host. My name is Valentino Braun, a.k.a. Scoochie Scroogey, host of the talk show Inside the Inner City. And telephone numbers tonight are 323-6232-325-4316-325-4259. And you can text us, powered by BTC, at 422-GR96. And the producer in the studio is Mr. Chris, who does a fantastic job with us here on Guardian Radio. And we do really appreciate all of our producers and also our talk show hosts who are doing a tremendously great job informing the Bahamian people, bringing the truth out and standing what they believe in. But most importantly, letting most of the callers themselves express themselves, and that's what we want to do. We want to be a station that helps fight for the direction of the country. And I, myself, was given this platform to talk about the inner city, tell them what the story is, find solution. And I always tell you guys, when I started Inside the Inner City on Guardian Radio, I told you about the invisible stuff. About the invisible stuff, and I always talk about the invisible stuff, whether it's police, whether it's the prison, whether it's the politics, whether it's us on the streets who, you know, have gone on a bad turn in life. And we talk about these problems and we find solutions. And the callers who call it themselves, they have a lot of the solutions to many of our country's problems. So today's show, we're going to talk about a little bit about the tourism industry. But before we get to that, we'll talk about some things when it comes to corruption. We want to knock on the two officers. We want to knock on the three government law enforcement officers who just was recently charged for bringing, pounds and pounds of drugs in the country, Adds on to the problem we're facing now in the country. And we as citizens really want some answers. But more importantly than answers, we want a solution on how we can slow this down tremendously in our armed forces, defense force. For prime example, our Royal Bahamas Police Force and even our customs and our immigration. Even when it comes to our politics, what are we going to put in place to protect ourselves from ourselves, from getting so corrupt that is overwhelming all of our government departments, and now we're stuck with a problem. How are you going to fix it? And it's going to take a lot to fix it. How are you going to instill it in officers who just come on the Royal Bahamas Police Force, but they've been taught by their instructors on how you can manipulate the system, and then once they learn it, they pass it on to the next officer, and all departments, and that's exactly what's happening in our country. They're being taught from officers before them. So we're going to have to find a way and how we're going to clean it up, because we're all Bahamians, but this is too much. Every day you look in the newspaper, it's always a different story with our officers, you know? And you can imagine how long this has been going on, but everything is being exposed now. So that's why I talk about invisible stuff. And if we want to fix the Bahamas, if we want the country to be a country where, you know, we feel a sense of safety and sense of integrity, you know, we set an example for the world, you know, because we can make the Bahamas the best little country in the world by standing for what's right, following God's part, because today, how things looking, you know, a lot of swearing going on, we're supposed to be protecting the Bahamian people. It seems that when we look at it, our law enforcement agencies with many of our officers who went on the wrong side, for those who are doing their job diligently in the country, we applaud you, but just that you guys are being overwhelmed by a lot of the cops now who are being indicted and those who are being investigated. And we really need to find a sense of urgency on how we're going to be able to deal with these matters, because it's hard. Listen to the former commissioner of police, Paul Rode, when he says, you know, it's hard to fire senior officers. It has to go to the parliamentarian, you know what I mean? It has to go to the governor general and the prime minister, you know? And then, you know, we look at the immigration officer, I think it's an immigration officer or custom officer, immigration officer who sexually assaulted a female who has now passed away. And we heard the apology of one Honorable Fred Mitchell, member of parliament for Fox Hill. You know, surprisingly gave her an apology, but I guess that apology, you know, really because the lady passed away and the government's at fault. So, you know, I'm wondering if this guy's going to continue to get his pension, or if the Bahamian taxpayers going to have to pay for what he did wrong and for what many of these officers who are before the courts, if they're going to keep their pension. Now, I don't want to take no bread or no one's moat, but when you look at all the civil lawsuits from immigrants here in the country, who are at the detention center, inmates at prison, persons who get locked up, file complaints against police, they're getting $80,000, $150,000, or because they win their case. So who's going to pay all the taxpayers? So when the government does the budget, it's me, you, and everyone else paying for the mistakes of law enforcement agents who are supposed to be properly trained, but they themselves are breaking the law. So we have to look into these things, you know, and I think that some of these incidents where these officers themselves are out there bribing people and et cetera, or causing harm to people, I think that if they're put before the courts, right, and they're getting a pay from government, well, take it out of their salary. I think that would decrease the assault charges against citizens in the country. So, you know, they sign a contract for 5 years, blah, 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 negative. They're getting their pension. But take it out of their pension. Take it out of their pension, you know. At the same time, I'd like to see the increase on payment for officers, you know, because we have to stop the risk of temptation. So I don't know how we're going to do that. And also pay them their insurance that they truly deserve, because, you know, the job is tiresome and stressful. So all in all, what I'm saying is that we have to find a way to increase their pay, but we also have to find a place where we have internal affairs and all government departments that goes after officers who they assume are dealing with illegal activity or corruption in a timely fashion. And that's what we need, you know, that's what we need the prime minister to do in this country, you know, because we trying to take up for what's wrong, but it's evident based on all the reports coming in the newspaper on a daily basis. And I heard the commissioner of police, Shanton Noel, speak on the two officers who are now before the courts. And she made a statement, Ms. Shanton Noel, commissioner of police. She stated that she is constantly telling our officers, right, about not doing things that are going to bring bad news to the Royal Bahamas Police Force. And yet still these officers, who are young officers, by the way, are continuing and are not listening to you as the commissioner of police. They are not listening to you as the commissioner of police because they, you guys have developed a sense of not disciplining and allowing for officers in many different departments to do things without reprimand, it is getting out of hand. It's passed on to all officers in the force now, the majority of officers in the force now, and they don't have no respect for position on the Royal Bahamas Police Force. It's simple as that. Same thing with the Defense Force. Same thing with immigration. Everyone is doing their own thing because there is not really no penalty. So for these persons who are employed by government, we pay them good. So we find them breaching law where they rape somebody, they harm somebody, they extort somebody, we take it with their paycheck. Simple as that. They're getting pension because we're talking about a pension plan now that the government, looking at the newspapers, the taxpayers to fund $1.2 billion to civil service. Okay? That's our taxpayers' money, people. Okay? So anytime these officers or anyone mess up, and I listen to some of the discussion going on in the parliament with Andre Rawlins asking the prime minister, is there certain monies for persons that the government used to defend those individuals? I think it's like $8 million. Okay? That's the taxpayers' money. And he was referring to things like Gardner, but the prime minister said that, you know, it's for all persons, I guess, who get themselves involved in criminal activities, and that money is there, et cetera, et cetera. All right? So I just wanted to say that. So I would like to say this to the Commissioner of Police. Our Commissioner of Police, they're not listening to you because it's out of hand. And you guys always taking up for the wrongdoings of the younger officers and the senior officers. So now y'all have given a sense of entitlement and a sense of protection. And now it has grown out of control. So ain't no use you telling them because they're not listening as you say. Because you're telling them with all these incidents of these serious offenses against law enforcement agents, high officials in the Royal Bahamas Police Force, okay? And many Defense Force officers, custom officers as well, and immigration officers as well. And they're not listening. So what you're gonna do when you have a serious problem? You look at it and you have to strategize, and you're gonna have to make a hard decision and come up with some alternative measures to see how you can reduce the corruption. And the only way you're gonna do that if you have internal investigation teams in each department that goes after individuals in government departments who breach the protocol on what they sign on to do, because they sign on to protect and serve. And if you look at it right now, a lot of them are on the other end. And the drugs supposed to be the number one priority for government to protect the citizens so that the citizen themselves don't get infected with these drugs. And it's reversed because our law enforcement agencies who have these titles use their position of power to smuggle tons of drugs in the U.S. and in the Bahamas and put on the streets. So they are actually doing more harm than good. They are actually destroying the country. And they put the blame on the lesser man. We need police cars. We have to equip the police. We have to get the Defense Force, all this stuff. When you look at it and you read the newspaper, without a doubt, you see these individuals are the ones who are bringing in all the drugs and firearms. And then we'll blame it on the guys on the streets. That's why, for me, I never want to have no gang thing no more in this country. Not me. Okay, so I just wanted to start it off. Now I'm going to the second part of the show. I have a caller. I'm going to take this call, and then I'm going to go to the second part of the show. Go ahead, caller. You are on Inside Inner City on Guardian Radio. Sorry for taking so long. Go ahead, caller. You still there? They left? Okay. So I want to give a public announcement. My good friend, Frankie, is having a pre-Father's Day. Anyone know Frankie? He has a business called Charms One. It was further down on East Street, but now it's on Scrawn's Corner, Thompson Lane, Scrawn's Corner. And then there's a big parking lot across from the Chinese. He's having a pre-Father's Day party. So please come out and enjoy yourself. It's on the 20th of June, so that's tomorrow. It starts at 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. There are going to be a lot of games, a lot of drinks, bring your fathers come out, bring your daughters, bring your sons. It's all about the fathers. So again, Charms One, pre-Father's Day, a live entertainment, a lot of drinks. Location, Fritz Lane, Scrawn's Corner. That's a parking lot on the corner across from the Chinese. And everyone is welcome to come. You know Frankie, he's in the car import, export. So if you need transmission, you need engine. If you need a fridge, you need a stove. You can always go to Charms One and he can bring these in for you. Doors, radiators, whatever you need, alternators, whatever you need. And he give you the cheapest prices. You can negotiate as well with Frankie. He does the majority of import and export down there in the area of Fritz Lane and Scrawn's Corner. Okay, so tomorrow, fathers, and also the ladies, you go out as well. You know, you're welcome to come out because it's a community affair. It starts at 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., okay? Charms One to the world, pre-Father's Day. Okay. Okay. Okay, yeah. That's Frankie texting me now. Yeah, so he's calling it the Charms Ground. E Street and Fritz Lane again. Players come out 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. So a lot of eats and drinks. They got a bouncing castle. They got a lot of stuff out there, I think, to accommodate the kids and et cetera, wise. The fathers are then enjoying themselves. He's going to have a lot of prizes. You're going to answer some questions. Frankie know how to put it. You know, Frankie's like the MP for that particular area. He does community work in that community every year. He does a lot of work, you know. He came very successful, and now he is always giving back. So we appreciate Frankie down there on East Street between Fritz Lane and Scrawn's Corner, East Street. Okay. Could we play the clip, please?
Despite welcoming millions of cruise passengers to Bahamian shores each year, newly appointed Minister of Tourism Glenys Hannam says more must be done to boost stopover visitor arrivals and maximize the economic benefits of tourism.
Most of our tourism numbers are amassed in cruise arrival. Almost 11 million passengers in 2025. We are perhaps the most significant cruise nation in the world, with Nassau alone recording about 6.7 million cruise passengers in 2025, making it the world's busiest transit cruise port. On spending, the ministry's cruise expenditure survey put the average at $78.77 per cruise passenger in 2020, while the FCCA and BRIA figure for 2023 and 2024 was $120.93 per passenger visit.
Hannah Martin noted that cruise passengers spend an average of just $120 per passenger visit, a figure she said pales in comparison to the approximately $2,700 spent by the average stopover visitor.
In other words, 80% of the visitors come via cruise and contribute approximately 20% to tourism spending. I do not think the case can be made any stronger than what these stark figures expose. This cruise industry also has unique features, including private islands, a port facility, Nassau Cruise Port, that is in many ways a resort unto itself. The outcomes we currently see take visitors further away from that interface with our people, and that's the product. Our people is the product, and they challenge the full economic potential of the industry.
She said the challenge for policymakers is to ensure cruise passengers engage more deeply with the broader Bahamian economy, increasing their spending and expanding the benefits of tourism across more sectors and communities. Hannah Martin revealed that the government will take steps to increase visitor spending, extend length of stay, encourage repeat visitation, and improve the share of tourism revenue retained within the Bahamas.
The impact of tourism must be felt more deeply, and we must reconceive tourism as that vital encounter which enriches and uplifts not only the visitor, but our own people. We have perfected ourselves for ourselves, to the benefit of ourselves, and the energy of that encounter is reciprocal and valuable to others. We want to see economic activity over the hill and throughout the islands as visitors see firsthand Bahamian communities at work and play. And so we must cultivate a stronger pride in the physical environment.
Reporting for the Guardian News Network, I'm Vonnie Toot.
Heard the comments by the Honorable Minister of Tourism, Glenys Annamadden. She is a terrific individual. She was on the show one time with me before the last general election. She, you know, hasn't lost her seat, so that means she's doing terrific work in the Anglican community. She, you know, as a female, you know, she is a very likable person. There's not much said bad about her. There's a lot of good said about her. She is not really criticized, so that means that she is a person who is humble. And I think that she holds great responsibility in the country. Because she has never lost her seat, that means people highly respect her in the Anglican community. Me personally, as an individual, I highly respect her as well, because she has to be doing something right in order to keep on winning. She was promoted to Minister of Tourism, and she was talking about the 11 million passengers, 11 million passengers, close to 12 million that came to the Bahamas in 2025. She talked about the $6.7 million with us, cruise passengers. And then she talked about each individual spends an average of $78 per passenger. And then she talks an additional $120 per passenger visit. I guess that's probably from the plane or whatever, et cetera, plane or boat she was referring to. She's talking that we need more overnight activities. See, I always explain this to the general public that with higher unemployment in the country, and a lot of our males and females themselves, you know, they're stagnated in the country, meaning that, you know, they don't know what they want to do with their lives, because when they look around, it's nothing really to offer, you know. When I mean offer, nothing creative like comes to mind. They put their hands on and touch. So we have to be more creative, especially how we have a high unemployment in the country. If you look around the streets, a lot of persons are looking for work, males and female. So a lot of them have lost their will to even go there and look for work. But the thing is, when I look at the tourism industry, as a young man, when I was younger, we had the Francis Hotel. We had Airbnb throughout the community of Grandstand. On Blue Hill Road, we had Airbnb, where we had black American tourists along with white American tourists would stay overnight in the inner city community of Grandstand. I myself used to go there myself and go to the shop for these individual tourists. And when they was leaving, going back to the cruise ship, or sometimes, I don't know, they probably came on plane, but we had a lot of overnight guests staying here in the inner city community. We had the Francis Hotel that used to have, I think, about anywhere between 100 rooms, and those 100 rooms used to be booked out. All right? Francis Hotel, right in Grandstand, that got condemned about 15, 20 years ago, and Purity Bakery acquired the land. But that itself was a hotel that guests came to stay overnight. And what it brought to the community is it brought funds to the community. And we always had the best technology, because when these guests came on plane and boat, when they were leaving, they would leave us that smaller TV. They would leave us with their cameras. You know, they would leave us whatever they brought from the States, whatever part of the States that they came from, they traveled from, they would leave those stuff with us. And at the same time, we always used to get tipped with American money, you know. So we had a lot of opportunities back in the day when we had overnight guests. And I guess when the drug era kicked in, our government at that time decided to stop the tourists from coming over there based on how the human anatomy changed. You know, we went from a peaceful set of people, hardworking people, into poisons now on drugs and not thinking straight. And we had a sickness. And people started to steal from one another. You know, so they feel that the tourists was threatened. And our government stopped the tourists from coming over the hill. And since then, we have never been able to fully recover in the country because a lot of trade was able to be made. Because you could sell coconut, you could sell junk canoe items, you know, you could sell your tart, you could sell your fish, you could sell your stew fish, you could sell your broil fish. You know, there were many different small locations where you could stop and, you know, get your little broil fish. So guests were walking on East Street, Blue Road, Market Street, and they were turning through the corners. And like I said, there are a few A and B, A, B, and B. There's nothing new under the sun. Okay, if you look at on Hay Street, the next A and B was the, it was the, oh, I get them, the Taylors, the John Taylors through Hay Street. That same pink two-story building, that was A, B, and B. You had across from the Francis Hotel, Miss Johnson, who was the family of Wooler Francis and Diana Francis. The Francis, them, they were my neighbors. Because my grandmother used to live, my grandmother used to live on the side of them. And across the road was their sister, Miss Johnson. And she had her ABNB where she used to rent out the tourists. And every day, we, as young kids and people living in the community, would go to the shop and we made a good living. But what it brought a lot of economy in the community. So no one was really out of work. Everyone could find something to do. You could have been a cleaner, you could have washed dishes. You could be a maid inside the community because money was making, so I don't need to work hard because I get an A, B, and B. But also, there was a lot of entertainment for the tourists because all of the nightclubs were open. We had the theaters. The tourists, them used to go to the Capitol. The tourists themselves, black and white, used to go to the Capitol Theater, which is now Beauty Bakery on Market Street. And you had the Cat and Fiddle, right, on East Street. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, excuse me. Then you had a lot of other, you had Peter's drum beat on Long Wharf, right? So you had a lot of places where tourists would roam and spend American dollars. But most important, they got a taste of Bahamian authentic food. Like I say, boiled fish. I can remember Ms. Wilson selling these stuff and the tourists, them walking, going up Market Street, and they're curious and they would stop. Kong fritters. Tourists used to go to the palm tree, Mr. Russell, you know? You understand? And they even used to go into the small convenience stores that were established in the community. That Edmund Moxie and the late great Edmund, not Edmund Moxie, and Sir Stafford Stein started the program with the overnight stay and developing an atmosphere for tourism. So when you're talking about this, nothing is new. The late, great Edmund Moxie, the Moxie Center down on Blue Hill Road, he is the architect. Him and the late Sir Stafford Sands. Yes, the Minister of Tourism. Them two collaborate together, white man and the black man collaborate together, and they decided to help build Jumbe Village. But they also started encourage other people to go into the tourism industry. So that's why we had a lot of boom of tourists in the community. At that time, I think it was estimated that we had 1 million guests used to be staying over the hill. So all the businesses were booming. I think there was agreement between the government and the Bahamas where they played $1 million so that the cruise ship would close down the cruise ship. This was the agreement, I think, between Sir Stafford Sands and Edmund Moxie and the cruise ship industry, because Edmund Moxie, the late great Edmund Moxie, we should be praising Edmund Moxie because he is the one that really is the architect of the small business and the tourism product over the hill, like the overnight stay. So we should always show respect to the late great Edmund Moxie. You know, I do my research. And he talked to Sir Stafford Sands. This came with the book called The Fate That Moved the Mountain. It was given to me by Sir Randall's daughter and his late wife when we did a program with Sir Randall's family and the connection with Dr. King in the Grandstand area. Yes. Yeah, so. Whew. I forget what I was going to say. No, it was so exciting. So, yeah, I went to Rottnell. So we ended up creating a site, the Dr. King site, through Lewis Creek. But what I was trying to say is that all in all, when you look at it, the overnight stay in this country could have still been going on today. So Edmund Moxey went to Stafford Sands, who was the Minister of Tourism, and he said to them, you know, why not let us start our small businesses and allow the tourists to come over the hill? At that particular time, the tourists them used to be on the cruise ship from morning to night, and they were not allowed to go over the hill. So Edmund Moxey, once he got the blessing from God, and this idea came in his mind, and he said that, you know, he was on the opposite side, I think, of the government. I think he was in the opposition. And Stafford was the UBP, I think. And he must have spoke in the House of Assembly, and he asked Stafford Sands if he would consider allowing Bahamians to start a small business and that he would allow the tourists to come over the hill. And I think that Mr. Stafford Sands asked him if he's crazy. But they said that Mr. Stafford Sands was a man who, if it made sense to him and it could help the people, he was for it. And they said that he brushed it off, and they said that the very next 2 days or day or so, he met with the late, great Edmund Moxey, and he asked him, how you think we could get that to work? And they sit down, they strategize, and he said to them that all the white people on Bay Street have all the wholesale business. Why not let us buy off you and start some of our business over the hill? And he said that, you know, we could start small business to the bottom of our house, to our house, and then we could rate upstairs like apartments. So that's where all this idea came in, and it made sense to Stafford Sands, and they ran in and they worked. And the agreement was, I think, they also talked to the cruise ship industry to allow the tourists to come, allow the cruise ship to close down, I think, at 5 o'clock. So the discussion is, we want the tourists to come over the hill so that Bahamians can make money over the hill. Glenys Hannah Martin is talking about when she said over the hill. Okay, no difference that I've been saying for many years, because I know this is how you can change the country. I know the tourism industry, but combined with the John Canoe and the talent we have in John Canoe and the talent we have in tourism, we could create taxi drivers, we could create guys who could just be guiding the tourists to and fro to the various different locations, to the churches, to the parks, you know, the things that we could create, to the John Canoe Sharks, you know, and stuff like walking them back over the hill, you know, make sure they're straight, you know, et cetera. So there's so much opportunities with the tourism industry that we have not even tapped in. Tourism combined with John Canoe, we'd see a complete change in the country and our attitude towards our citizens in the country. And we definitely would create more overnight stay in the country, because we just can't develop Bay Street. We have to develop Nassau. Lewis Street is Nassau. Hay Street is Nassau. Mason Addition is Nassau. All of this area, I think, for us, call it the University of the Bahamas, from Nassau Street, from Bay Street to Nassau Street, go back to, I think, if I'm correct, go back to Collins Wall and come back. I think all of that is Nassau. You consider the Nassau. And that's the area you're in. Okay? That is considered Nassau. So when people say Nassau, people don't understand Nassau is actually that part of that constituency. We live in the city of Nassau, which is Bay Street. So all of that right there, from there, go back from the University of the Bahamas. All of that there, go back. All of those corners go back. What it look like with all kind of derelict vehicles, rundown homes, et cetera. All of that is Bay Street. So what are we supposed to be seeing down here? Transform community. You understand? From the University of the Bahamas, go back. We're supposed to have abundance of tourists walking through our community, stopping the convenience stores, stopping to the local John Canoe Sharks, stopping to the local restaurants, stopping to the local entertainment spots in this country. And what you have, you would have American money in the hands of Bahamians, and this would change the way how we think. This would stop stealing. This would stop criminal activities, because now I, as a young man, seeing tourists walk around every day, I could build my coconut stall, right? Once I clean, I get my cups, I get my screener, I have my garbage disposal, I get my gloves on my hand, and our spot is clean, and we get our license, and we have a volume of customers now, because you need customers. So if Ms. Han is talking about, she said, yeah, 11 point something million tourists comes to our shores, and this is the highest, with 6.7 million coming by, I think that's by cruise, and then they're spending like $78, and we could increase that. You know, if we can increase that spending right there in the hands of Irish Bahamians over the hill, coming down from Mason Addition to those steps, being creative, you know, coming down Grandstand and stopping to many of the local spots that we can create. Cosmetology stores where Bahamian girls, they get a proper training, get their small business license. They can go and do some Bahamian nails, you know, set up nice, neat, cross my restaurant, you know, build them a nice little shed. You could cut Caucasian hair. They need their nails too. And they want to get some braids and stuff like that. So we can have all these things happening in this community to provide empowerment to our citizens right in their community. And we could transform this whole community. Listen, we could transform all this community up in here into small business with the tourism and junk canoe aspect, because there's so much talent. Taxi drivers, hair braiders, barbers, tour guides, bus drivers, scooter rental, horse and carriage. This would create thousands and thousands of jobs in the inner city community. We're going to take this call. Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside the Inner City on Guardian Radio.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. And this time around, tourism will be doing well for the Inside the Inner City.
Yes, sir.
And how are you today?
I'm fine, teacher.
Yeah, once you... And then I remember that that's my good family. I call her my family because of the honor connection. You know, in-laws from the rest of... Also, I live in Mini Street, so I live in Angleton.
Yes.
I lived there many years, maybe from 93 to 2006, thereabout. So three of my daughters, that was the address when they were born, even though they were born in PMH.
Yes, sir.
I'm a Mini Street guy. And so I have every confidence that our minister, who was once Minister of Transport, then once Minister of Education, and now the first Minister of
tourism.
First lady minister for tourism.
She truly deserve it.
Will do the good things of our father and everything else right there in that ministry. And breaking ground, and it will be the whole country will blossom.
Yes.
And the same thing that you're talking about.
Yes.
So you've laid out a nice history and the way it was done before and the way it will be done again.
Yes.
So I appreciate you and I support you and I thank you.
Thank you very much.
For your reminder and what I want to say, your promotion of the good things yet to come.
Yes, sir.
And that is about to come. ASAP.
Yes, sir. Thank you, teacher.
You're welcome, bro.
I truly appreciate it. And that's the concept of the show, and that's what I bring to the stage. You know, I'm supportive of programs that are going to be beneficial to the country, but I knew that's why I have the show. I know that if you want to change the country, if you want to change the mindset, the real dope money, listen, the real cocaine money, listen, young people, listen to me. The real cocaine money or drug money, right, is in tourism. That's legit money. I mean legit. You can make money off so many, just tours, okay, walking them down and you showing them different spots by the church, just to show them that church right there. Get them in the street on that church, you know? Carrying them to get their hair braided or carrying them to get a breakfast. That's the real cocaine money or drug money. The thing is, you're not going to go to jail. You're not going to be wanted by the police. And you're not going to destroy the country. You're going to give the country good representation because you yourself would be our ambassador for the country because you know how we treat our guests. So the real dope money, listen, the real dope money, right? The real drugs money is in the tourism. You know, I was going to the beach every Sunday, every week, and my boy Rasta is beer on John Canoe Beach. Tiki hot. Okay, call it coming right now. Let me let you talk first and then come back and tell the story. I'm going to talk about Tikiyan. And I can tell you the story about Tikiyan out there. And I can tell you about Rasta Star on out on Junkaloo Beach when they come back and show you how you can start from nothing and become great. Okay? Caller, you're on Guardian Radio.
Why were you Scrooge?
I'm fine.
Radio, I'm Luby Georges.
Hey, what do you say, Luby? Everything good?
Everything is blessed, my brother.
Yes, sir. Good to hear you. Go ahead. Don't take too much of your time. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, man. I just want to let you know that, your talk show is one that I enjoy probably more than many of the other talk shows.
Wow, thank you. I rank it
very high on my book.
Thank you, sir.
Because, you know, you're coming from a down-home place. We know your history. We know your background. And, you know, you speak real talk. The way you deliver your conversations also, you know, the average man is able to connect and understand exactly where you're coming from.
Yes, sir.
You get where I'm coming from?
Yes, sir.
And you just hit on something that I wanted to touch on. You alluded to it, and you're going to get into it after the call, like you said, with the history and the story of Tiki Hut and how that started.
Yes.
You know, as I was listening to your show and then also listening to the Minister of Tourism the other day,
yes,
you know, I stopped and paused for a minute and said to myself, because I'm from Gambro, I'm from the inner city myself.
Yes, you are.
I still hang out. I still chill out. I'm still around all the guys.
That's the best place to be, Lou V. You ain't got no place to go. That's the best place.
Listen to me. You know, people talk about Gambro and look at it like this and look at it like that. And I tell you, I can't see myself, you know, being more comfortable in any other area than Gambro.
Yes. You understand the area.
Yeah, man. Just like you with Baines and Grandstown.
Yes. There's no reason to be afraid.
From my side, and even me sometimes, I'm like, boy.
There's no reason to be afraid.
I'm hanging out in Baines down.
There's no reason to be afraid.
And that's all the thing. You know, those myths, we got to do something about debunking those and, you know, bringing out documentaries and stories and more conversations to have people understand what these areas are truly about, the great people that come from them, the history. You know, I just learned a lot just from listening to at least 20 to 30 minutes of Grand Sound.
Yes.
These are things that I didn't know.
Yes.
I am a 40-year-old man, and some of the things that you touched on, I did not know.
Yes.
But you can't blame me. You can't blame others if we're not telling the story.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, as we think about tourism, and like you said, there's nothing new under the sun, I kind of slightly beg to differ with that.
Okay.
Because we have a lot of creative people, man, in the Bahamas. Bahamian people are very creative, you know? But what happens, or tends to happen, in my personal opinion, is that access to capital. While we talk, and it's getting harder today, or it is harder today than it was yesterday.
Yes, Luby.
You know, I'm looking on social media. I saw a post today, and for the past few weeks, every time I go on Facebook, there's this company with the go-karts. I think it's called Island Adventure. Sorry for
Yes.
But I see them with the go-karts and the what you call those things, the four-wheelers. And, you know, tourists having adventures and they taking them out into the forest. By the lake or by the beach. And I was in Costa Rica last year, August of last year. And that was one of the experiences that I was looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
My kids was looking forward to the ATV in.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? It was perfectly curated for tourists to have an amazing experience.
Yes.
And when you think about the family islands and, you know, the forests and just the makeup of our family islands, these are some of the things that we have to remember that tourists are looking for an experience. When I go to any country in this world, I'm looking for an experience. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So the opportunities are there in the tourism industry, like you said.
Yes.
The real money.
Yes.
It is there. But how do I start up? Like, for example, this Island Adventures people, they just came out of the blue.
Yeah.
But we don't know how long they've been working towards that business model.
Good point.
And finally broke through.
Yes.
Somebody probably believed in them.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe they were saving up. Maybe they went into an ASU.
Yes.
Maybe they got a loan for a car, and instead of getting a car, they did something different with it.
Yes.
But access to funding, is very, very difficult for persons who don't have anything, for persons who don't have any collateral, no matter what brilliant and bright ideas they may have.
Yeah.
And so in my personal opinion, you know, our civic leaders, our MPs, I would like to see in these areas and pockets of areas like Camp Road and the Baines and Grahamstown, the inner city MPs, you know, the Anglicans, we have the Minister of Tourism as the MP for Anglicans. You know, working with the international community or local community, set up certain programs where these young people can be coached into designing business plans, bringing their ideas and putting that pen to paper and putting it into a proper document where there may be annually grant and funding opportunities for these brilliant ideas that they may have.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? So again, for me, it comes down to access and primarily access to funding and capital. And that is why maybe some of these persons, their dreams may be crushed and they may end up having to do the menial jobs and go 20, 30 years and, you know, you only earn a minimum wage and you never truly get to live out your dream while living in paradise.
Yeah.
Because we don't have that access to the funding and it's not easy. You know, a lot of these persons that we're talking about may not have been the most academically inclined in high school or otherwise. And so they don't have the, you know, those particular documents and certificates that some institutions may be looking for.
Yeah.
And they may not be trusted for whatever reason. But guess what? They may be some of the best people, the most trustworthy.
I agree.
Some of the best ideas.
I agree.
But who's listening to them? Who's giving them an opportunity? Who's trying to teach them, hey, this is the way the world works. I hear you with this idea, but you got to put pen to paper. But guess what? I don't know how to put pen to paper. I don't know how to draft a proper business plan with projections and all of these other things that goes in it.
Something like Silicon Valley. Something like Silicon Valley. They bring great minds there from all walks of life and give them the opportunity. They present it and they give them the funds and they go and they create great things for their country and the world itself.
Even if the community has to invest or partner in and be bought or receives some sort of percentage off of it that goes back into the community because the, you know, public funding or the MP or whatever was able to help to fund this, yada, yada. I don't know. Set up a model.
Yes.
But it still boils down to, in my opinion, access to funding and access to capital for these young people. And not necessarily young people, but
anybody.
People.
Anybody.
I'm sure there are countless Bahamians out there sitting around and being in Grahamstown and Camp Road and Nassau Village and Foxville and these other areas who have amazing ideas. When you go downtown and you look at the tourism product, you see, while nothing is new, take, for example, the touring people.
Mm-hmm.
It was always the buses, the jitneys, posters, right?
I guess
now you got, you know, the
bicycle tour,
rooftop bubble decker bus riding around town. Should I say, you got the little electrical tour.
Which you can rent with the card,
You know what I'm saying? So people are thinking about other experiences or other ways to not reinvent the wheel, but add a different flavor to this thing that was already created.
Yes.
But if you don't have the capital or if you can't access that capital, how are you then going to send off to China or Japan to buy one, two electrical buses or vans? And gives these people this open air experience where they feel like, you know, they can touch, they can feel, they can hear, they can smell
like
the environment like while they're touring.
Like the party bus. You ever see the party bus? I know you see the party bus, but it's make me laugh. Let's be all bus up and that, bro.
Exactly. And exposure also goes along with.
Yes.
Listen, going to Miami and Fort Lauderdale or Orlando alone is not enough exposure.
Yeah.
Travel to different Caribbean, Latin American, European countries if you can.
Yeah.
And trust me, when you arrive at these places, you're amazed. Look at it. But me, when I travel, what I look at is, wow, I see what I'm grateful for having in my country, the Bahamas, based on what this particular place may be lacking. And at the same time, I look at, wow, we don't have this, we don't have that. That's an opportunity. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These are the things, that's the contrast I make. What we don't have, and what we're blessed for having that these people don't have.
Got
but at
it.
The same time, you see opportunities that you can bring back home.
Yeah.
But capital, you need the funding. You need the money. Yes, the money is in tourism, but you need money to start.
Yeah,
be I able
agree.
To make the money.
Yeah, it's cost
of crap. But I'll hang up though and listen to you. Yeah. And I'm really eager to hear the story about the Tiki Hut and how
okay.
that got started.
Okay.
Continue doing the great
okay.
job, please.
Thank you, man. You did an awesome job too, man, Mr. George. You know, and I appreciate persons like Mr. George for commenting on the show because great minds think alike. You know, Camp Road can be transformed the same way. In fact, Camp Road is one of the areas, too, that had Airbnb that was established many years ago. So, like he said, we could be creative, you know, if we could get the opportunity to get the sniping from government or private sector to build a little mini mall in the community where we get up here, operators, barbershop. Attendees, you know, you might want to put on a bakery in there, you know. Just build a specific spot in the community that you feel that, you know, this is a safe spot and we all working together and we want to empower people. But we want to turn this area into a tourist destination. Like, for instance, the reason me and Yuli Wogus, who wife Amanda Colston, she was in charge of the National Art Gallery. And when we walk and we look at the streets and around there was undeveloped, a lot of rundown houses through Greycliffe Corner. Now, if you notice, now I made a suggestion to Yuli. All of you could turn into a tourist attraction to get a tourist to come through and stop, even though they were coming through. And then they got together. And now look at that community right now. They are from Watson Distillery, going down to the beach, all up and then now turning into a tourist attraction, where tourists stopping and spending money through that community right up and down. And if you just add some behemoth attraction there, like with Luby's suggestion and what I'm suggesting with small businesses, once they can get the funding, the sky's the limit. So let me go to a Tiki Hut. You see Tiki there? As a young man, I used to go on the beach, right? And when you go on the beach, Tiki was a young, you know, little older guy, you know, looking for his end life. Now I watch it with my eyes. So occasionally we go on the beach, but I had this umbrella. You know, that's one little umbrella. You know, and the guy's a millionaire now, you know. Watch this, right? So he would be on the beach with his umbrella. Now, why is he swimming off? He played basketball on Sunday. Why is he swimming? He on the beach, he get his table, you know, just one little table. He gets some coconut water there. And he had some chicken wings, you know. So, you know, he had that umbrella. Now, mind you, know, we passing this guy by. Now, you getting that one, two customers, you know. But occasionally, we keep on going on the beach over the years. So the same guy right there with his one little table, with his one little coconut water, with his one little small little thing where you're doing your little chicken wings out there, you know? All we started to do is see it started to develop. Like Luby George said, he might have gotten in contact with somebody who give him an opportunity to help expand his business. Then when you look, he get a big umbrella on the beach now, right? And he get a little setup, you know? Then he having more and more customers, right? And people that was like 20, 25 years ago, 30 years ago. Now I look at the progress of him right now because what he had? He had location and the most important thing, he had customers. See, we value tourists who come to our country, the 11.7 million or 12 million, we look at them as tourists. No. They customers. You understand? They come on vacation to spend money. They are customers. They are not tourists. They are customers who come to the Bahamas to put money in the economy, okay? They are customers. So if we don't start treating them like customers, then we ain't making no sense because the 5,000 kids we get out of school right now who can't find an employment, right? They would be easy to find employment because an average taxi driver who was employed downtown can have a salary close to $80,000. So I'm encouraging young people out there who looking for something to do. Go get your small business license. Go look up on cheap wine in Japan or China. Go to the small business. Talk to some of your family. And go be a taxi driver. But be the cheapest. And don't swing people. Be courteous and be honest. A regular taxi driver in this country can make close to $80,000 to $90,000 a year. Okay? So a lot of you who come into the school, go be a taxi driver. You understand? Or a tour guide. As well, you know? And Tiki started from nothing, but he had location, he had tourists, and he take advantage of that. Now look at him. He's out there and he's a millionaire. He has a staff that he pays close to $1 million a year that he pays out there. And the volume of customers that he has out there is crazy. You could imagine. Tourists are coming over the hill now, but they don't have no spot where they can stop to. That's why I'm building my restaurant. I'm trying to get some assistance now to build some little small stores for other people in the community so we all could benefit. Because, you know, once we work together, we talk together, we have our meetings, we could deal with the garbage, we could deal with the little arguments. We could deal with a rogue business owner in the community who trying to mess the bread and butter up for everyone else. So we have to pull him on the side, he or she on the side, and say, look, if you don't govern yourself, you're going to live and we're going to have to replace you. You understand? We're going to take this next call. Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside the Inner City.
Scrooge, how you doing?
I'm fine.
You hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. I just want to call and touch on a couple of points that you talk, that you speak on. More specifically with Luby George and Relis yourself talk about it, access to funding. Let me just first give you a story about life, right? There was a group of people that was born in a cave. They never left the cave. They were chained in the cave, facing forward, and the outside world was the passage through the cave. They never could look back. And this walkway was backlit with sun or with candles or fire. And as they walk on this bridge, they cast shadows on the wall. And you have pictures of, they have shadows all in gray. And they never could look back to see what it is. You have shadows of gray, of this gray. They heard people call them dogs. And they see the shadow on the wall in gray that they call trees and people and vehicles and all of these things. But the entire generations, they continuously face the wall chain. Over the years, a number of the younger generation, chains fell away. And what they did was they stumbled out of the cave and came into the sunlight. For a while, the sun kind of like confusion, whatever else. But as their eyes adjusted to the sun, they saw the colors. They were somewhat confused. They saw colors, and they saw that dogs had furs and birds had feathers and colors and fruits and things. So they saw these things. And the blindness of what they experienced was not real. It was not fully the experience. So after spending sufficient time outside, that they got knowledge of these things for what they really are, they returned to the cave to explain to their kinfolks that what they're seeing on the wall is not real. There are colors to the trees, bird has feathers, dogs have, and cats have fur, and all these different things. But the leaders of the cave ostracized those individuals and began to explain to those that dwell in the cave the reason why they should never go outside into the sunlight, because they will be driven mad, like these individuals coming back talking about colors and things. That's the Bahamas. There's individuals that goes out and see, and they talk about this aspect. For instance, you guys talk about funding. First of all, we have never truly defined the three aspects of our existence, which is travel, hospitality, and tourism. Travel is the airlift. Hospitality is the hotel, the vacation rentals, the micro resorts, etc. And tourism is the bond where they identify around our culture, our beaches, our heritage, our ecology, our creative industries. And so we keep talking about tourism, where travel creates the access, hospitality creates comfort, and tourism creates the demand. And so we keep talking about tourism, and never in the context of fully of these three industries or sectors we are in. And so the problem is that since you, it says whatever, it says you cannot manage what you cannot measure, you cannot measure what you can't acknowledge. And so I say that is the problem we have. And so what we have is essentially an idea, these shadows on the wall that has been given to us, and we've been trying to build bigger shadows. And so the problem is, like, when you talk about capital access, I've heard leadership talk about gatekeepers and access to capital. There's about $3 to $4 billion in liquidity sitting in the bank $4 to $5 billion in dead money in the bushes, and about not million. Sorry, it's about $3 to $4 billion mm-hmm. in liquidity sitting in our banks. About $4 billion sitting in dead money in the bushes and everything else, mm-hmm. and about $60 billion right now in the Bahamas. $60 billion is sitting idle in equity inside of the Bahamas, but yet we talk about lack of money. Now, having been in the banking business, there's a concept called vehicles that banks finance. The problem is that we have never been taught what vehicles are. You hear people all the time say, you go to the bank, they'll give you money for a car or a truck or something else. The problem is banks are in the business of financing vehicles. That's their only business practically other than taking deposits. Mm-hmm. The problem is we confuse transportation
yes.
with the vehicles that banks lend to.
Yeah.
An automobile is a vehicle the bank lends money to for transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Home ownership, houses, are vehicles. You notice the word again? Vehicles mm-hmm. they give you for home ownership, houses.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses are vehicles that you can get financed by the bank to build wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to first understand, when I go to the bank, I said to them, I want to buy a Ford F-250. The bank doesn't ask me, does it have four wheels? Does it have a windshield? Does it have an engine? It doesn't ask me any of those things. Because instantly, they can recognize and see the vehicle. When they go and ask for a house, to buy a home, they don't say, does it come with a door? What about windows? What about a roof? What about electricity? Because they can see that vehicle. So when you go to the bank with this business and they don't see instantly the vehicle you're presenting and they have to keep asking you, what about this? What about that? What about that? You have not bought a full vehicle. Why does bank lend vehicles? Because if you, as a bank, if you don't pay me for that automobile, I can take you out and put somebody else in.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pay me for that house, I can take you out or that vehicle and put someone else in. But present the vehicle that we call a business to the bank, there's no means of taking you out and putting somebody else in.
Mm.
So the problem is that you have to then learn, how do you define?
Mm-hmm.
It's first of all, money does not make money. It's a fallacy.
Mm.
Ideas, when put with money, multiplies money.
Yes.
And so the ideas are there, but we have not comprehensively harnessed those ideas and present to the bank so that when you ask for it, when I say bank, I'm also talking about regular finances.
Mm-hmm.
Locally and globally, because as it stands right now, where we were stuck looking at the $3 billion in the banks, or the $4 billion in the bush, or the $60 billion that's locked away in equity, today there is quadrillions of dollars available in the open market as the globe shifts towards new type of funding vehicles that's available. And the number one part of that is going to be tokenization. We hear Donald Dumpton talk about the Genius Act and the Security Act and tokens and stable coins and whatever. So we are so busy, we are not listening to or learning the language of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we basically have begun to focus on the gate that has been chained and additional chains has been put on the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sit around and discuss how this chain gate is preventing us not realizing that the fence is no longer there.
Yeah.
So we do have access to these different things, but if we are locked into and focused on the shadows,
yeah.
we miss the full blending of the prism
I feel you.
Of colors that is available. And so what we have to do is we have to stop talking about the symptoms and begin to talk about planting new seeds.
Mm-hmm.
That will take root within our economy. How many people talk about these things you talk about? The first thing is that we have to understand what will it take for us to increase the travel? And so, and this is why for me, I get disappointed when I hear them talk about 19 airports or the airports on Grand Bahama. Let's just Grand Bahamas myself. When you talk about the $250 million for the hotel of the airport that you need, you could go and get approval in principle. The government of the Bahamas has the ability to give a sovereign guarantee to get that $250 million in 30 days. The problem is not getting the guarantee for the money for the airport. They ask you some filler questions.
Mm-hmm.
When this airport comes true, what is the throughput that you have to bring through the airport for it to be viable? And then they'll say, over the year, we need, let's say, 1 million people. They say, that's great. Mm-hmm. Now, when these 1 million people come through the airport, where are they going to be staying? You have 1,500 rooms. Well, according to our numbers and the average stays and whatever else, you need about 20,000 rooms on Grand Bahama. They said, but so you don't have the rooms.
Yes,
so this
true.
Airport viability then falls away. So we have talked about the airports and all these 19 airports around.
But we, ain't but we didn't no, talk about no the hotels to accommodate the
accommodate them.
Yes.
So you can't build one thing. You have to build them all simultaneously.
Yeah.
And this is when you say you talk about the vehicles. You don't build a tire. You build the engine, the body, the inside, the AC. All of these things are built at once.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is, when you have 20,000 rooms on Grand Bahama, that means you need about 60,000 people.
Yeah.
And you say, wait a minute, but you don't have housing for the people to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've added another layer to this airport being built. So you now not only need the rooms, you need now need a place for them to stay. Oh, wait a minute, that means you need more policemen.
Yeah.
You need more fire. You need more medical. You need more energy. You need more food stores. And so we've been talking about how do we kick the tires. We have never had true conversation on how we build the wheels, because the word tourism aspect of it is the visitor experience and the destination economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we say build tourism, but you can't build tourism without simultaneously looking at the travel hospitality and the tourism ecosystem at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why when you hear the minister stands up and say, or the Minister of Tourism, oh, 28,000 28 people, you need 28 cruise people to replace, to spend as much money as one stay over.
Mm-hmm.
And so here it is that you have $75. Let's use $75. Let's put it to $80. So that means, and you go for 30, that means for every 30 travel people you have, you need 2,500. Every 2,500 travel, but you can replace that note, 30 times 80, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to finish my numbers. But either way, hear this. If you take the 12 million people and divide that by 30, you have 400,000 visitors. The same amount of visitors we have lost in stopover, and we replace them with what is called captured paradise.
Yeah.
Because the cruise industry captures 90% of the income in any industry. And so we have been growing that part of it because you know why? They have been building their vehicle.
Yeah.
We have not built ours.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much. And what he's talking about, the ports, you know, if you look at the ports, what they've been able to establish, you'd see the cruise ship industry has an island, and what they do, they build a resort. So when they bring their cruise ship in, they have places for them to go A, B, and B. Chester Cooper's doing the same thing in Exuma. What he's talking about, I understand exactly what he's talking about. That's why I talk about A, B, and B in the community and stuff like that, because we have the guests, them coming off the ship, and they're walking in the community. They actually walk in the community before darkfall. You know, they frequent the community. If you ride and you look on E Street, Market Street, and Blue Road, anywhere, anytime around in the daylight, before 5, and even sometimes later, you would see tourists coming frequently walking over there. They want places to go to spend a few dollars. They sure they're going to spend more than $78, you know? And then let me tell you about Rasta. I go on the beach every week, and I look at how beneficial the tourism industry is. You could even rent umbrellas out there. You know, one umbrella along with one lazy boy out there is $20. You could charge $10. You could be creative and get those wheelie tents like that where they go. Then some big yellow wheel bikes together, then you can go and float over there. I think they rent them for like $50, must be for an hour or 30 minutes. So, you know, there's so much base, you know. And like you say, you know, it is there. We have the tire, you know, and then we have to be able to have the fund. And he said it's the funding is there. We just got to know where to start. Well, for me, I already started. I've been started. And I'm slowly creeping. I'm going to talk to the the Honorable Minister of Tourism, and see if I could help her with her indoors and see if we could tie into what we need to tie in to see how we can improve the conditions in the community, because there's a lot of weakness in the tourism industry as well, because, like I tell you, I go downtown, and here's the thing, what I can pinpoint. A lot of tourists don't know where they're going. There are no signs pinpointing where you need to go to the fort, the government house, the Grey Cliff. You know, some of the sidewalks downtown needs to be fixed because we have people who are disabled coming off the cruise ship. And on the side of the road, they can't maneuver, et cetera. I had an experience with a disabled tourist a few months ago. Him and his wife was Dunkin' Donut. He was trying to get up on the right side to go to Grey Cliff, but as he used his mobile wheelchair, he was unable to maneuver on that side of the road, so he was in danger because he was on the side of the road while oncoming traffic going down the hill, he was going up. So I had to stop traffic, tell him to come across, put him on the left side of the road, and I had to be behind him as he going up. And then we reached the peak of Grey Cliff. I was able to stop traffic. At least they saw me assisting them. One thing I say with BMNs, we are very helpful. So they stop traffic by the red light, and I point them in the direction of Grey Cliff and tell them go across the road. That is Grey Cliff. Locations need to be established on the wall. Signs pointing to where Fort Charlotte, where the fort is, where the 66th step is, you know, so that we can make it more accessible to the tourists, you know. There's so much change we need to be at and that I see we lack it, you know. And also, fast the jet ski operators, you know. It's a little difficult. We have a lot of good jet ski operators in the country now based on accidental death. We've had a few reports of rape and et cetera like that. Some false, some ain't false. Because we have Bahamian guys who, you know, in the jet ski business, they forget that you come here to make money, not pleasure. The tourists are guests and they are customers. Your job is to go and do your job. You know, I saw the videos. So what we need to do, we need to find regulation on how we could work with the jet ski operators. Let the operators who own the companies tell their staff, this is what we expect from you. You're not allowed this. If they can't drive the jet ski, you have to be able to explain to them if they can't drive, show them how they can drive. If you are going to go on the jet ski with them, you're not allowed to touch them inappropriately and no other position than what they want to be touched, because we have a lot of guys who, when I see with my own eyes, who kind of making good money, right? But they are over-jealous, they're not really professional. So just clean it up, you know? Just clean it up. We need to clean it up. We need our restrictions. We need it, like I said, we have to tell the jet ski guys who get higher from the jet ski what we expect from them. We need to have poisons, the police or defense force, or we have a jet ski team put together, just like the internal affairs, but this is internal affairs of jet ski. It's a team of security officers or someone from government. I don't know. Lifeguards who monitor the area, make sure that all the requirements are being met, checking up on the guests, asking them questions, even though sometimes they lie. But in this case, everyone can be lying. And some of our guys do actually go overboard. And I did see the video. I did see the second video. We had persons who drive reckless, and take evident causing accidents, in some cases, cost their lives. So, you know, follow the restriction, the safety requirements, you know. It's things that we could shape up on, and we need to shape up on, because now we're getting travel advisory from on updates from the U.S. Embassy concerning complaints made against Bahamian jet ski operators who have sexually assaulted American guests that comes to our shore. And that is acceptable because you come to make money. You can do it on your own time. You know, you might meet somebody, but you're not on the job. All right? You don't know if people are recording and you're giving us a blind eye, but it's something that can be fixed. It's just that we have to come down hard, put our internal affairs in that department where we have persons who ride on jet ski, check the jet ski operators, make sure all the requirements are being met. Defense force officers will be checking, police will be checking, and any complaints be made, we would deal with it in a timely fashion. If we have to take some people license because of it, if they are not at fault. If they are at fault, probably you're fine. If they are at fault, probably take their license where they did a second offense with someone who they are employed with. So, Human Minutes, we can put a little clip, please. We get a little clip. Former Prime Minister.
And our tourists come from the U.S., you know. 50-60% come from the Florida area. You can imagine if we were to lose 80% of revenue stream, the impact that would have. So should we wait until the entire society is affected, or should we wipe out the bad apples and resolve the issue and prevent any future ramification? So I would say the ambassador is absolutely correct, you know. He's thrown the warning out there, and the warning was out there a long time ago. The president had requested that this matter be resolved. Then I had met with him. The matter has not been resolved. Obviously, if we were to look at it, it must have gotten even worse. The complaints probably has increased. And what they're trying to tell you is, listen, we do not want to move at another stage where the Bahamian people can suffer. Let's stop that now.
And that's former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Minnis, and he's speaking on the part of the ambassador message to Obama's government concerning complaints made against female tourists and the accidents that occur in our country. And Minnis was stating that he, as Prime Minister, got information concerning it, and he himself was not able to deal with it. That means it was nothing a priority for him. See, when they talk, I speak between the lines, and you ain't making no sense, because like I say, all it takes for you is to get a group of young people. See, listen to me. I think of C.R. Johnson talking. When we talking about, you know, about the tire, right? Listen, if you have a problem, all we got to do is get a team of persons, right? Put them through lifeguard training. You know, they probably get trained for the defense force as well. They now are the ones who patrol the designated areas where the tourists them rent these particular jet ski. So they'd be monitoring. They would know the players in the game. They could give out citations. They could even take the jet ski if they are in the right, because we have persons who abuse their power. You know, we don't want persons who get this position as a lifeguard with the authority to apprehend or give us citations or be able to work in hand with the police for you to be a cocky person, and then you just target persons because you and the person had a dispute. And the person trying to talk to you, but you just ain't listening to none because you are power struck. So we also have to put that in the minds of persons who have this, who gets this power. Because you see how it has, what it has done to our law enforcement agencies, and especially many senior officers, because they abuse their power. Our defense force, they abuse our power. Detention center, they abuse their power because we fail to let them know and instruct them that they serve a purpose, and their purpose is not to oppress people unless the person themselves is behaving in a disorderly fashion. But you as a person in government departments, you should not be using your position as power to take advantage of others. You understand? And that's where we're going wrong in the country. So we need to put mechanism in place. So we need a team of jet ski operators. They have a base. You know, probably be a lifeguard. I don't know. Whatever it is, they train, they sign on, they go and they check these particular spots, they monitor, they could drive, they could call the defense, they could call the police, they have jet ski, and they patrol in all these spots, and to make sure that the tourists get to their destination on time, to make sure that they're not harmed, and if they see anything that's illegal, they can, to their best ability, deal with it professionally, because you also know that you're dealing with people who own business, and they themselves could be trying to make a point, but you don't even hear that point. So you have to make it your business also to de-escalate situation as well. So that's what we need. It ain't no biggie, you know. We just need get a 10-man jet ski. For our second ceremony, look at, and this is a part of Ministry of Tourism too. These are the things why I say I gotta talk to Ms. Hannah. You know? We have lifeguards up there, supposed to be sitting on everywhere on the beach. Well, train, and who has the equipment? There are new equipments available right now, like a life jacket that is remote controlled. All of these things can be reinvented as far as the tourist destination downtown to secure that safety. So we got to be creative, man. Creative. And a lot of signs got to go up. So that's why I got to talk to Ms. Hannah, you know? So that's the former prime minister talking, but he said that, you know, we have to root it out. And it's a simple model, you know, just harbor trolls, guys checking in, you know, but also work with jet ski operators because, you know, a lot of young men need to work, but they also need to be disciplined and governed because, like I say, they can get rogue sometime. We're going to take this last call. Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside Inner City.
Yeah, bless us, Coach, brother.
Hey, what do you say, brother? What do you say, brother?
Yeah, great show. You know, I like your conversation. I just wanted to piggyback on a little aspect of what C. Allen was talking about, and I'm trying to be sincere here, right? As what he was saying, you know, the cruise industry has been building their brand. You remember some years back, Hubert Ingham was in charge, and we had, you remember the article in the newspaper, $50 million to dredge the harbor, right?
Yeah, yes.
And so which we did to facilitate the depth, facilitate bigger cruise ship because some of them, you know, the harbor was too shallow, right?
Yes.
$50 million of taxpayers' dollars. That was some collaboration with them and the Bahamian government, right? So I always was suspicious about that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah. And we need to do somebody like Lang, somebody who's, you know, like we can find out the exchange as to, like, you know, there's money between us if it's really profitable. See, Allen talk about the numerology, the trickle-down effect, whatever. Mm-hmm. But see, for me, right, what concerns me is I had a whistleblower, and sometime I'd called the talk show years ago, and I discussed features and factors by this industry on these cocoa keys, these different keys, these islands that they have, right?
Yeah.
So given the fact that we know that everybody could turn a blind eye with whatever, right? All right?
Yeah.
Now, if a whistleblower, you saw the article the other day with the guys, I'm saying they've got to bait outside and all that, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I can't remember if they say the tourists was there or they wasn't there sometime back.
Yep. They were complaining.
So that was some inglorious BS. So but the thing is for me, this guy disclosed, I won't talk about the living quarters, et cetera, but he's talking about how they get rid of the waste, et cetera, whether it be industrial, whatever, right? And this is describe some trench or whatever, and how they get rid of this waste into the sea, et cetera, right? So I'm trying to find out if you have strict environmental guidelines and people go over there, and if they see breaches, they publicize it? Because when you have your own island and the workers are there, they can be silenced or intimidated, et cetera, so
yes.
Even... And then speaking with a brethren who lives in the fire trail area, and he was talking with an unregulated community or regulated community,
yeah.
Just the fact that people are allowed to have homes and then dispense their waste with a pipe into Harold Pond or whatever pond is the rest of this community. So I'm not even, these are the type of things that concerns me. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, I you know, given the fact that we don't have a lot of ordinances and a lot of enforcement, you know, these are the type of things that I'm concerned about. And so, the cruise industry is a powerful industry, like the banks. And so, in short, I'll hang up. Want to be naive to believe that they're not breaking environmental laws. That's all I'll say.
Okay. I'll comment on it real quick. I'd just like to say something real quick. See, Allen, if you're listening, someone just called, sent a message, say, see, Allen, could you call back, please, and give your number? Say, me and some people listening would like to talk to you. So, see, Allen, there's someone asking you. If you could call back and just give out your number, if it's possible. They say they have a few of them are listening, and they want to talk to you. So I'm sending a message to you. Yeah, and let me say this to 52. 52, you're quite correct. Yes, we have a tourism ministry, but we're talking about global warming and we're attacking the Bahamas. The stock of those cruise ships are pollution. And then there are thousands of guests who travel between many different Caribbean islands, between the Bahamas, Trinidad and Tobago and stuff like that, there's a lot of waste. You're talking about bleach, diesel, you're talking about sewage waste, feces, pee, and joy, and all that stuff. And then they release this, I think, 100 miles out from the shore. That means the cruise ship, after they filtrate their waste supply, they release it in the water. And that'd be tons. So when they release that, you can imagine this, that's a tons of waste with bleach and all that stuff now. And it releases spoils in the water. But before it spoils, you know, that's a lot of stuff. So that's a take up a, that might take up a mile of that particular area of that waste coming off the cruise ship. And you can imagine all this passing through the country. So yes, environmental things also have to be discussed. So the Minister of Tourism is Glenys Hanlon-Mann. She also has a look at that. Overnight stay is good, but she also has a look at the environment impact. How it impacts the environment and see how we reduce the pollution, because cruise ships bring a lot of pollution in the country. And yes, 52, you're correct. You know, because when I was a young boy, when we used to swim a long wharf, cruise ships used to come in and they used to release that in the harbor. And there was no report about it, because listen why I say they used to release it. We know they used to release it because the ground used to be black. Right? All of a sudden, you're in the water, you see a lot of fishes, pinches just jumping up in the water. And then while you're in the water, you see the water get dark, you know? And we used to be right on the long wharf, and then when you look, you feel like itching, and you had to run under the water. And then you see this long slick, you know, of thing in the water, and then the current would take it. And they used to release that in the harbor. You don't want to tell me that. I know that. So you're not lying on what you're saying. And then they change it, and they say they're not going to dump it in the harbor no more. And they started dumping like 50 nautical miles or 100 nautical miles away from the bomb. So when they owed up, they dumped that. But the pollution stays in the water. And that's why we got a lot of fish with a lot of mercury. We have fish with cocaine in the Bahamas and all. Mercury and cocaine in our fish in this ocean, in the Bahamas ocean. Rachel, I watch it on National Geographic. They talk when they test the fish in Nassau, they're finding mercury in our fish. Where do you think it's coming from? It got to come from somewhere, the cruise ships. He's right. Yeah, 52, you make a good, valid point. And then, you know, we're turning a blind eye because, you know, our government, you know, we can't really depend on them when it comes to being transparent. Because you could get a payoff, you know. If you, I ain't saying Ms. Hanna, he's the minister of this particular department, you know. And, you know, you could come to some type of agreement because, you know, you have this contract with this company, with the government, and what they do, you know, you're turning a blind eye, you know, because we have hard reports, you know. So that's how it is, okay? That's how it is. So we asked 52, you're correct. But like I say, I feel that Grandstand, Camp Road, the scripts can be transformed into a tourism market with junk canoe, you know, with taxi drivers, with hair braiders, you know, with barbers, with bakers, with smaller restaurant, Airbnb, you know. And I think we could see a shift. And we need that capital, you know, so it can happen, you know, in our country. And again, I hope you enjoy the show. We're getting close to closing out, and we hit on numerous topics tonight, but all it is to see that we can transform the country. And we heard the Minister of Tourism, Ms. Glenys Hanlon-Mann, talking about overnight stay. You know, we can make it happen. It just takes that we're going to have to sit down to the table, to the think tank, and see how we can make it work. Let me give you a plan. Let me give you a quick rundown. You see the old city market building right there? What you think that could turn and do? That could be a mini scroll market right there, and that'd be the gateway for other people to make a good living right up there by the old city market where one family's practice. That right there is a perfect small mini scroll market. And then you could add a lot of entertainment, a lot of stalls outside as well. And then through them corners like Lewis Street, Hay Street, and Taylor Street, we could start a lot of small businesses that would branch off from that, because when they get crowded, the tourists are going to come down, walk in, and spend to each one of those stores. Hair braiding stall, cosmetology store, you know, taxi drivers around in the community, riding them around, making a good living, because they also doing tours. They're not just taxi drivers, they're also tour drivers. So like I say, yes, we can make it happen. All right? And remember this, we should give praise to Edmund Moxie, the late great Edmund Moxie, and the late great Stafford Sands, for them helping create small business for the over the hill, for the over the hill community. And remember this, the cruise ship used to close at, I think, 5 or 6 o'clock. And then they were allowed to go over the hill to stay overnight. Okay? And that's how a lot of Bahamian was able to earn a great living, because now they have customers coming in their community, to their convenience store, to their barber store, to the Airbnb, to the fisherman, to the small hotels and stuff in the community. And that worked out. So we just have to go again and reinvent the wheel again. My name is Valentino O'Brien, host of the talk show Inside the Inner City that premieres every Friday at 6:30 to 8 p.m. I hope you enjoy the show. To all the callers, wonderful weekend and enjoy. Okay?
No bribe or no joke. If you find fire, you're definitely find smoke. Bit on, bro. Boy, I'm from Bit on, bro.